This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Daniel Lambert from Daniel Lambert Wines in Wales. How are you, mate?
Yeah, fine.
Last week we were talking to you about Brexit. This week we're going to continue on looking at some of the issues associated with some of the ranging issues. Do you think ultimately independent merchants will go to the wall, or do you, or possibly wholesalers, or do you think it's more of a case of just cost and range?
Okay, well, that's a great question, and it's a difficult answer. I think that this is not really a Brexit issue now, because we've also got COVID. Mm. The on-trade is being decimated.
Yeah.
Daily that it's not open, and my heart goes out to all the on-trade people that are sitting at home wanting to work, and the sooner they could be back at work and the sooner we can get that back up and running, the better for the industry as a whole. You know, the all of the off-trade has just had the most exceptional 12-month trading period, and they're all in a very good financial position.
Yeah.
And all of the supply chain behind that is in a good financial position. If you're on the other side of the coin, though, and you're in the supply chain for on-trade, you're on your knees already. And so I don't think you're going to see bankruptcies from Brexit quite yet, but I do think you're going to see bankruptcies from COVID.
Okay.
And I think that the two are very different issues, but I wouldn't want the two to get confused. As I say, it's a great question, and you're going to have a muddying of waters here.
Yeah, okay. All right. No, that's fair enough. One of the issues I think that you've got to watch out for, particularly for the independent wine merchant, is that they want to have a different range to what's in the supermarkets. They want to have a different
sure.
range to the competitor up the road, and probably to the restaurant down the street either as well.
Yeah.
And if you start seeing a reduction in range, it'll be harder for them to be able to differentiate their product.
Yeah. Well, this is where agents come in. As I say, agents now have a vital role to try and continue with as much range as possible. I mean, when we get, you know, 4 or 5 months down the road with this, and we haven't had all the rules come in, I think we're going to get to that in a minute, but once we have all the rules implied, it will be then for us to take decisions as, okay, what can we lose? What can we get rid of that isn't cost effective? We haven't done that yet because we're trying to maintain status quo as best we can. We have put some prices up. I mean, a lot of people have asked, well, have you actually put any price up? We have actually put 4 wines up, and we put them up by 20p in one case. Another one's gone up by 40p because those are so niche-y, but to me, important wines. And rather than lose them at this point, I've brought them in, but I've had to put the price up. So, mm-hmm. So it is real. This really is happening. You know, I talk about Burgundy where we're trying to maintain status quo, but there are other wines whereby these are standalone regions. You can't group them with anything else. You're not going to ship multiple pallets of them because you would be looking at the stock for years. And so in this situation, you have to put the price up. You've got no choice.
I can think of Jura would be a classic example, perhaps, or something like that.
Jura, Albarino is a very good example.
Really? I would have thought Albarino is quite popular. You would have been able to shift that.
It is popular. No, it's popular, but you can't group it with anything.
Ah.
It's a standalone region, you know. It's so remote from all the other regions within Spain that you only ever ship it on its own.
What about Burgundy?
Well, Burgundy's a funny one because Burgundy is a quagmire. We're lucky we've got a platform where we can put all our Burgundy on one document. We're very lucky in that respect, and that's been our business model for a long, long time. But if you're a producer, if you're an independent and you were shipping from 10 different producers and they were all cooperating and putting their stuff on one pallet, that's gone. You can't do that anymore. And you're not going to ship a pallet or two pallets of Merso or two pallets of Puddy Fusse or Chassin Morichet. Who's going to ship that?
Yeah, getting hard enough getting hold of that much stock, I would have thought, with some of the producers.
Well, yeah, there is that as well. I mean, you know, so again, these are the nuances of the wine trade that are completely escaped. These nuances escape politicians. But again, unless you're in the wine trade, you're not going to know this stuff. And so this is why the politicians need to stop meddling with the wine trade, because they don't understand what they're meddling with.
We've talked about most of the processes that's gone on in the past, what's going on at the moment. What's happened to this? There's this form called VI1 that was all the discussion about 6 months ago and what a nightmare it was with chemical testing and all sorts of stuff. What's going on?
So VI1s are being introduced, basically shelved by the deal that was done on Christmas Eve. And there was a 6 month window, basically a transition period. So we have a transition. We're actually in transition for the full set of paperwork. Now, this is where it gets very interesting. And this is where I get actually quite angry with government, because they are deliberately misleading both Parliament and the House of Lords with what VI1s are, their purpose, and the support they have for them. Now, Victoria Prentice has put in writing, and I have the evidence. I've got the papers in the letter.
Who's Victoria Prentice?
So Victoria Prentice, she's the Minister at DEFRA who looks after wine. She's part of the UK government. She's a cabinet minister, et cetera, et cetera. So she has actually said to Parliament in the written notes that the introduction of VI1s is something that they've closely worked with the WSTA and the wine industry, and it's something that has the UK wine industry's approval. She's put that in writing. But that is not true. That is a briefing document for Lords and MPs to understand why this is being brought forward, and moreover, that the industry supports it. It doesn't support it. Nobody in the industry supports it.
What, VI1, is that a document that the UK government wants or EU requires?
Okay, so the VI1 was originally created by the EU government for third country wines. That's where it comes from,
yep.
Okay?
Yep.
Now, the EU government has it because it's protecting its GIs. Its areas of origin, et cetera, et cetera. So a GI would be something like Chablis or Sancerre or Bordeaux, et cetera. Now, these VI documents, first of all, they were originally going to be done on a basis of chemical analysis, but they're now saying that they're going to be a paper document, but you don't need it. Now, the information that will be put on a VI1, a UK version, would be all the same information that's already on all the other documents that you have already. First question is, why do you need a third document that already tells you what's on the two other documents you already have? So that's the first question. The second question is, why is the UK, with a Brexit government in power, trying to introduce paperwork that is a protectionist for the EU? Again, it doesn't follow. It doesn't make any sense. Third point, it's quite clear to me from the canvassing I've done in the last month that, and the last 6 months for that matter, that nobody supports VI1s. Yet the government is misleading Parliament and the House of Lords, saying that it has the full support. So why are they doing this? They serve no purpose. They don't collect any tax. The information on them is already on the other documentation. There is no reason to introduce them. And yet the government seemed adamant to introduce them and lie about it to everybody, which is why the industry is getting frustrated.
The original VI1s that are used for EU, they need chemical analysis as part
yes,
of that documentation.
The current EU ones, which is an interesting point. The UK ones are now saying they wouldn't.
Yeah, because I would have thought, at least from a tax point of view, you need to know the alcohol level.
That's on the CATA.
That's someone's declaration of it.
Yeah, the CATA isn't there for people to know what's coming in. That's the tax calculation. The CATA on cheap is there to tell the government what they're going to earn in tax. The alcohol and commodity codes are all on the CATA. So you don't. The VI1 is going to contribute a big fat zero to the picture. It's bringing nothing to the game apart from being an utter pain in the ass for everybody that has to print them, create them, and deal with them. There's no value to them. There's no benefit to them. They're not required. They don't add any information. It's like having a stowaway on a boat. There's no point in it being there.
It's not quite the same as a stowaway, because a stowaway, you don't know it's there. Whereas a VI1, yeah, you've got to do some work.
Exactly. Yeah, okay. Well, it's like a bad smell in the room. There we go.
Okay. All right. So the government, what's their plan for VI1s? You said they were due to roll them out in July, I think, wasn't it?
I've been asking for the last 7 months why they want to introduce them, because I think that's a pretty fair question. I mean, what is your motivation for them? I've had three responses from Victoria Prentice. One is basically saying that they want a level playing field, which is not really answering the question. I've then asked the salient question, how much research have you done into the purpose of them for the UK market? And she stood up in the House of Commons on the 15th of January 2021 and she said, we have done no research into the impact on the wine industry of VI1s.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, so they want to introduce something that's pointless, and they actually haven't seen the impact it's going to have on the industry in terms of financial cost and burden on the industry itself. So not only do they not understand what these documents are, they've done no research into what they're going to do, and they don't actually know the effect they're going to have.
Could it be something to do with the fact that if they're bringing in wines from, say, a third country, well, all wine coming in, apart from European wines, into the UK would be a third country. Do they not need that? Because the UK's got a massive rebottling plant in Bristol, and those wines used to be...
The VI1 is, that's an EU thing. It's interesting you should say that, because, again, I spoke to a minister in the EU Parliament, and I actually asked her this question. I said, do you think it's time you got rid of VI1s in the EU completely? Because the point of them was to protect the GIs. But we're in a day and age now where the GIs are pretty much established and wine production across the world is at a very different place where it was 25 years ago. The quality is controlled by all of the various local syndicates and nothing's going to cross the EU border because you've got the relevant paperwork on EMCS anyway. And she agreed. She agreed. She said, yeah, we should get rid of VI1s. So even the EU is thinking about getting rid of VI1s. Completely.
Yeah.
So in a free country like the UK, which doesn't have to protect its wine industry, there are no GIs in the UK that need protecting in terms of wine production. I mean, you know, it's not as if you're going to be bottling wines from California and calling them Devon White. It's not going to happen. So I honestly do not know what the big deal is here. VI1s should all be scrapped in entirety. It would actually make the UK incredibly competitive for the rest of the world. The rest of the world would be singing the praises of the UK if it got rid of VI1s. And it's a UK decision. It's not an EU decision. This is a UK decision that could be taken by Parliament right now and could save everybody an awful lot of pain. But no, they continue to pursue this nonsense with VI1s, not understanding them, not wanting to talk about them, and not justifying them.
My attitude is that you know, when the Brexit was being negotiated or discussed, even before the election, I always said, look, it's a 10-year program. This is going to take a decade to get sorted. And everybody I knew just laughed at me and said, it's not going to take a decade. And I said, well, okay, but when England joined the EU, I lived in New Zealand, and their main trading partner was UK. UK closed their door to it, and it took New Zealand 10 years to reorientate and get itself back into shape, you know, after a massive recession and all this sort of carry on, to come right. And I said, well, it's going to be 10 years. And from the moment they announced the Brexit and the economy started underperforming at that point, when was Brexit? It was
2016 was the referendum.
2016, yeah. So we've got four years to go. 4 years to go.
Yeah. Well, that's one government, isn't it?
All right, Daniel, I think I'm going to wrap it up there.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, no problem.